I know what you're going to do, Charmer. I'm going to go ahead and introduce the episode. You're going to be annoying. I know what's going to happen.
I'm not going to do anything.
I don't believe you.
I'm a little drunk.
All right.
I'm a little drunk. It'll be all right.
Excellent. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very, very special episode of Hot Dogs and Caviar. Today is the first ever
special
Hot Dogs and Caviar cocktail hour. We are recording at night. It is 9:30 in the evening, and we are just getting started. Tarver had the brilliant idea. First off, we just had a hard time getting together with him in the mornings, but Tarver had the brilliant idea. Let's have an episode party and have drinks. So that's happening.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. So this is going to be perhaps even a little more loosey-goosey than our normal, extremely regimented, scripted, highly disciplined format.
If you can keep up, then you're gold. Yeah.
But once again, of course, obviously, we have the inimitable Tarver Super King on with us, and it's just fantastic. Everyone knows the episodes are a lot more fun when he's here, just because Nate and I are honestly not that interesting, guys. It's okay. It's just one of those things. I mean, I'm good at filling a lot of empty air, just not with a lot of stuff. I just come in here and vomit cotton candy. But anyway, I'll probably cut that out. That wasn't that funny. Or maybe I leave it in because that made it funnier. At any rate, so
you
before
fill air with volume too. It's a good thing.
I mean, filling air is a bit of a specialty of mine. So we have a fun episode. We're just gonna have a prompt this week. Our prompt is ramen. We're just gonna discuss ramen and just skid back and forth and just talk about it because it's something that's very interesting. It's been very trendy in the culinary world the last few years. But before we get into that, I have a fun game. Well, I don't know. Maybe it'll be fun, maybe it won't be, but I have a game. I learned two new dishes out of nowhere this last 2 weeks. I found out from them in very strange places, and I want to see if these guys have heard of them, because I learned about them,
shit,
researched them, and then actually cooked them, and they came out interestingly. So, and every time I try to scoop Tarver on anything, he's already done it better than me. So At this point, we're gonna see if I manage to surprise.
I have the memory of a goldfish. I'm sure I'm gonna forget everything we are about. I don't know.
You forget everything except food, man.
Yeah.
All right. So the first dish I learned about from someone online. I was having an online discussion about like Mexican dishes that people don't think of when they think of Mexican food, and how, you know, everyone always thinks tacos, enchiladas, burritos, just the ceviche, the normal spread of Mexican food, tortas. We were sort of spitballing about what other Mexican food was there. And at the end of the conversation, I left that open and I was like, hey, if anybody else has anything that we haven't talked about, come at me. And the internet's a big place, but only one person did. And it was, from the name, I think it was a woman from Central Mexico, who said her favorite dish was called chile atole. That's C-H-I-L-E-A-T-O-L-E. And it is a corn and masa stew with chili peppers. Have you guys ever heard of this?
Wait, did you already give the answer to the quiz question?
What?
You said you were going to list off like a list of ingredients. We have to guess what it is.
No, I never said it was going to be a quiz. I just wanted to see if you guys had heard of this. Have you ever encountered chile atole?
I have not. Please explain.
So it was an interesting dish. So you start off by just taking corn, like sweet corn kernels, and simmering them in water for longer than you think is a good idea. Like, you know how you just blanch corn real quick for a couple of minutes, just enough to pop it up? This, you're almost cooking corn in almost into a porridge. Like, not quite to where it breaks down, but definitely until it softens. And then in the water, you throw some salt and some epazote, which is like a mint-like herb that Mexicans use. And then on the side, in the meantime, you make a green salsa that would be like poblano chili, a jalapeno, a big handful of spinach, and then some masa, some like corn flour kneaded into masa dough. And so you have this like a chili sauce. And then when the corn has been simmered for about 20 minutes, you take the masa dough and pour it. And you also take an ear of corn and cut it into like thick slices and simmer those too. So you've got corn ears cooking to a porridge, but you've also got corn on the actual cob in 1-inch sections cooking. Then, I don't know why you do the corn kernels and the corn slices, but every recipe I saw had that like that. And then when the corn is starting to get quite soft, you sort of swirl in the masa chili sauce that you made and then simmer it until the masa hydrolyzes and thickens the stew. So you have this corn, green chili, and masa. So it's got the dried corn from the masa and the sweet corn together. So it's this great corn punch.
That sounds delicious.
Flavored with chilies, epazote, and lime juice. And then you serve it in a bowl, garnished with more epazote leaves, some corn. The recipe that I had them used some like corn, not corn silk, like corn husks, just pieces of corn husk. I think those were for looks. I tried to eat one. It didn't work out. And then also a roasted serrano chili and a bunch of grated like queso fresco. So it was like crumbly white.
So it was like
cheese.
A stew?
It was like a what's corn the stew. It was like, I think you'd call it an appetizer.
How thick?
Or like, it got pretty thick. Not quite thick as chili, but the masa thickened right up. So it was like.
Like a bechamel thick or?
Yeah, but well.
Or like corn chowder, you know, like kind of.
It was thicker than it was like a corn fat chowder that had been slightly over thickened, but thickened with masa. So it was like
right.
corn flavor in all the liquid.
Dude, the weather's mm-hmm. getting cold, man. That sounds good for some cold weather eating.
And the thing
some
is,
autumn.
This is perfect for autumn because I feel like yeah. it's really good for end of the season corn. Like you wouldn't want to put,
season, yeah.
you wouldn't want to put perfect plump sweet corn. It happened that I got the corn at the Mexican store and the corn I got kind of sucked. It was starting to dry out and this couldn't have been a better place to use it. Which was a happy accident. But yeah, chile atole.
Right.
I'm doing a blog write-up on hot dogs and caviar at blogspot.com. You know, ABS, always be shilling. but that was the first dish I tried that was new. That was last week. And then totally by chance, I learned another Latin American dish this week. Have either of you guys ever heard of pupusas?
Pupusas?
Oh, I love yeah. eating that. I mean,
are you serious? There are pupusa joints like everywhere. Like,
really?
That is like one of the greatest fucking things in the world.
I've never seen one. I've never heard of one.
Jesse Sutton.
What?
Oh my God. We have some pupusa eating to do.
I did some pupusa eating today.
Dude, yeah. There is a pupuseria in.
That is totally not what I thought you said.
Wow, I thought Nate was kidding. This is going to be complicated to edit.
Jesse, there is a pupuseria here. There are two of them. There's so three. Fucking
one,
four.
One,
that are
one out of it. One out of two. Stump the Tarver. God damn it.
Dude, pupusas are like that's one of the greatest things you can fucking eat, man. Like, and there are like I don't know if you've ever been to an actual like pupuseria where
no,
that's like all they do.
I have a bar regular where I work that's from El Salvador, and he was telling me about some of his native foods because it was slow, and I was just striking up a conversation because that's what bartenders do when there's nothing going on instead of like cleaning or prepping or like what a cook would do. And he started telling me about some of his favorite foods. And I was like, well, I try to learn a new dish every week, every couple of weeks. I'll take that and run with it. So I went home and looked up a recipe online. I made some masa dough, and I went with pupusa de calabaza. So it was like grated Oaxaca cheese, roasted butternut squash.
Yes.
So what you like, just for the listeners at home, what you do is you make masa, like masa dough, like so masa flour, corn tortilla flour. You make a soft masa dough, and then you pat it into like a little hamburger patty. And then you put a filling on one side and fold it over like you're making a wonton, and you kind of seal it up and then pack it in your hands until you make it back into a circle and then pat it out flat like a pancake and griddle it. And then you serve it alongside cortito, which is this vinegary, spicy cabbage slaw.
Awesome. And it's so good.
It's
so,
just amazing.
So good.
I thought this was going to be a fun experiment because I rarely sneak anything past Tarver. So I feel like one out of two ain't bad. That's batting 500, man. That's like Ted Williams on a good day. So I'm okay with the way this played out. Tarver, you jerk. Where are you seeing? Because the thing is, El Salvadorian food just isn't around in South Carolina, but it also wasn't. I never saw it in Chicago either. Where are you? Is it like in Virginia? Do you have an El Salvador community?
I'm very surprised that you haven't heard of that because it just must not be in your area because that is a, I can't think. I mean, there are pupuserias in Virginia Beach. When I went to go visit my family, there's like they're all over the place up here.
Nate, have you seen this?
No, never heard of it.
They're like wonton pancakes made of masa.
Dude, yeah, and like even like the queso pupusas. There's a pupuseria in Percival, Virginia, where I am, that has like 10 of, I mean, there's like pescado, there's
there were so many filling options. I just went with one that...
I mean, you can put anything in a pupusa and it's awesome. And like, the thing about pupusas, though, I have to say,
yeah, get it.
Like,
get it.
I understand, like, you get a pizza. Like, I mean, like, there's dough conditioners putting into fucking Domino's and all that kind of shit so that, like, it tastes good later and the next day. Pupusas, you fucking eat that shit there. Like, don't leave. Like, go, like, pupusas suck after just a few minutes. Well, they don't suck. They're just not as good.
Have you ever like, seen there's no such thing as espresso to go. Drink it at the counter.
Yeah. Eat it there. Like, you need to get that thing right off the griddle. Like, especially, and like, you need to find the ones that use the really good masa flour. You can get like crap masa flour. And like, some places, they just order like these mass produced, stale, sometimes like musty masa flours, and they don't taste right. They kind of have like a little bit of an unpleasant funk to them.
I was using crappy masa flour because I was using masa
that's flour. What I was just I bet you that's where I went awry many years ago, is when I was messing with masa, and I probably just had crappy masa I had no idea. I don't know what a good brand is. I didn't know what I was.
A huge difference. There's a brand, I'm trying to remember the name, but it's like a bright, almost neon orange bag. Like, we used to get it from IGF. You can find it in a lot of like international food stores, but like, I mean, just like usually when you make pupusas, like you add like scorched, like scalded water to like masa flour with salt, you know? And like, mm-hmm. as soon as you add the water, your entire kitchen smells like tortillas. Like, it's like really, really fragrant, brand new. And like, it just hydrates instantly. That's another reason, you know, like it's really good stuff. But this pupuseria in Percival, the last time I went there, I walked in and typical fat fuck me. Like, I'm like, I was like, I went in there thinking like, oh, I'll just get like a pork pupusa or something. I look at the menu, there's like 12 of them. And I was like, holy shit, I'll take one of all of them. And then they gave me like, I'll just take one of all. So I walked out with 12. I went in there looking for one and I left with 12, and all 12, were fucking awesome.
Tonight for dinner, I had three, and they were the vegetarian ones. I would have loved to have made the pork ones, but I wanted to get this done today. And the calabaza, the squash and cheese, that was a filling I could throw together in 45 minutes. So I went that direction just because I'm already learning something new. But you know what?
I don't know what the pupusa is called, but there's one that it has chorizo in it. But what makes it awesome is they cook the pupusa in rendered chorizo fat.
Oh, so like, word. And,
yes. See? And like, the entire thing is like slick and red with like chorizo fat. You know, it's
anytime I have a new dish that I've tried out for the blog and I haven't done the write-up yet, I'm going to run it past Tarver because I know he's probably going to have something awesome to say. This was a completely successful segment, in my opinion. Nate, wouldn't you agree?
Go get pupusas, whoever's listening.
Always.
Yeah,
we now we've all heard of the time where Tarver ordered one of each of all 12 pupusas.
Have you ever?
I want stickers that say "Eat more pupusa."
Yeah. Yeah, right. Pupusa is objectively fun to say. Nate's barely said anything. That he's just laughing his ass off. Yeah. He's like Robin Quivers on Howard Stern, he's just dying over there in the corner.
You guys. That's
oh my
spectacular.
God.
Oh my God.
If
oh
I can
God.
Like tap in and like where we're going with this, like, have you ever had arepas or sopa?
I've had sopes.
Sopes? Am I saying it wrong? I'm probably saying it wrong.
Sopes, little Mexican boats made of masa?
Yeah, so it's like really thick. Like, also, I equate to it as like a thick flour tortilla. It's almost like a tartine, but if it's a Mexican flour, thick flour tortilla.
Masa cake, maybe? I made those. The different sope for me is like a pupusa where the topping just goes on top instead of inside. And then arepa, I've never had one, but I actually looked them up because I read that pupusas were similar to arepas. I also don't have an arepa place around here, but a friend of mine
if you were to cross a pupusa with a sopa,
Sopé.
You would have sopé. Thank you. I would. No. You would have an arepa. Like yeah, arepa is basically like a thick masa flour cake. Very similar to like a sopa. Like, it's really like almost like a very similar to a pupusa, but it's like a little bit thicker and like, you know, really chewy and soft and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for like, I have a Puerto Rican friend that she was telling me about arepas. Tell me that was something I need to get.
So good. They're so good. One of your
there's a good joke in there somewhere. I just can't find the wording.
It's buried deep in there, but it's definitely there.
Buried that deep. And with that, let's move on. Let's move on before this descends into insanity. All right. Well, in that case, here's the jump off. The topic is ramen.
Can I please say something? Can I interject before we move on into the subject?
You may
indeed. Your
motion granted.
I'll allow it. The last two episodes you guys did were absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And like, I mean, volume, like cooking by ratio, cooking by volume. Not only was it just brilliant, like I feel like that is a lot of the future of recipe writing, cuisine in general. That's how we've been working. Like we've spent I'm trying to like condense like a mountain of fucking things I want to say into a little bit, but like we have been ever since we worked together at Woodlands and we start and like Moleskine books came out in the very beginning, and like we were like, holy shit, that's like the stuff, the book that Indiana Jones used to write in, and we thought it was super cool. We started writing like all our recipes and those things. I got like a stack of them like this big, and like I spent years compiling those things into Google Drive so that we like, anytime we had a new hire, I could just add them as, you know, like a user or whatever. And if they sucked and we fired them, like I could take them out, you know, they would only have like instant access. But I could just say like, hey, pull up blank recipe. I need a 3 times of that or whatever. To add on to that, like there are, we didn't get this deep into it, but you can use, it's the same thing as Microsoft Excel, but Google Sheets. Like you can like put recipes in and like and multiply and add sums and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I'm getting way off track here. The point is that the volume using thing like Nate, you mentioned Henderson brine. Like that is still our standard brine for everything. That being said, have you ever done equilibrium brining?
Yes, many.
Equilibrium brining, you have to have more patience.
Stop, cut. Nate, say again, you glitched out real bad.
I was just going to say, tell people about equilibrium brining. That's
dude, yeah. Like, you have to have a little bit more patience because it definitely takes a little bit longer. And I am not going to have my percentages off the top of my head. This is why I use things like Google to remind me of things and I write everything down. But like, you know, poultry, if I remember right, is like 1.5% or 2%, like, you know, pork. No. It's like 1.5%, like pork. We use 2%. But you basically brine, you put a protein into water in a certain container, you measure and you pour off the amount of water that you needed to cover that protein. You measure out by weight 2% in salt and for pork, for example, and then you let it brine, and you can let it brine for far longer than you would with a gradient brine, like the Henderson brine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole the whole point of equilibrium is that the idea is that you get the water to where when it's perfectly brined, there's the same amount of water, there's the same amount of salt in the water as there is in the food. So if you let it sit in there for an extra week, that's probably not a great idea from a shelf life standpoint, but it won't brine any further. You said
reaches equilibrium, it'll never over brine. It's slower and it takes a lot longer because there's less osmotic pressure and it takes longer and it's slower, but it also eliminates like, oh no, I forgot to pull the chicken out of the Henderson brine.
Right, who among us hasn't had that happen? I remember Nate walks out of the walk-in with a 5-gallon Cambro full of duck legs and just walks into the kitchen and yells, God damn it all. And they had been in there for like an extra week. I mean, it was like they'd gotten pushed to the back of the walk-in and then weird shit happened. And like, then all of a sudden we were like, okay, these are
you have duck ham now.
Not even. You have duck salt.
But it's the osmotic pressure, yeah. Man. That's exactly what it is. Like when you use a gradient, any type of brine, and you're using osmosis, and you're making the cells swell with moisture. Uh-huh. Equilibrium brining is far more of that effect, where like it ends up so much juicier than it ever could before. You just have to like have the patience for it. But the only thing is like gradient brining. Like I don't know if you've ever done like really long corning of. Man, Nate and Jesse, do you remember? I don't know if you remember this. It was one of the, I think what when you were just telling that story, it reminded me of it. We were brining oxtails, and we forgot them. And they brined for like 3 weeks. It was a long time, a long time. They were completely corned. I mean, they were like completely corned. When we cooked them, they were like the most juiciest, craziest, juiciest oxtails I've ever, like it was almost like, we had to try and figure out ways to use it. Like it was so tender, like it was just like melt, like either had like almost had no texture at all, like eating a cloud or something like that. But I'm sorry, I'm getting off track. The brining, like that is a perfect use of ratios. You, Jesse, you mentioned country pate. Do you remember the pate to campaign that we worked on, and we went through like 50 or so recipes? That same pate to, that same French country pate I still use now, like all the time. That is a perfect example
of ratio, man.
But that's another ratio that I wanted to like commend you guys on, because Jesse, you had mentioned you like the differences of using different proteins in something like a pate or a sausage. Nate, you had mentioned in other episodes, you know, over the last few podcasts or whatever, but like using different proteins in something like a pate by ratio and volume to create a certain texture. Like if you use nothing but lean sirloin to make meatloaf, you would have this dry, grainy crap. Mm-hmm. But if you were to like use a certain ratio of beef and veal, and then you wanted more mouthfeel, and you incorporated something like sweetbread or brain or liver, like you would end up like with these different textures, like these creamier textures. That was one of the things that I just blew my mind. I completely forgot of how we used to work on those ratios to get that pate to campaign perfect. Like there was a certain ratio of like pork belly, sweetbread to get this super silky, creamy, perfect, but still meaty texture. Like, but like doing like a creme brulee, like we made the pate to campaign, did the pressing and all that kind of stuff, all that stuff with the bacon wrapped around it, coated in sugar and bruleed it. So it was like crispy.
That sounds like, great.
Dude, it was so fucking good, man. And then just like certain like acidulated condiment, you know, like components, like pickles and vinegars and that kind of thing, it balances. But when you heat it and you melt some of those fats, that ratio of protein is perfect. It's so perfect. Like there's the lean proteins that give body, the fattier proteins that give moisture, and the softer proteins that give texture. That is, I like listening to those last two podcasts you guys did was just like refreshing to me. Like it was just, I just want to take a second to say high five virtually. You guys killed it. That was awesome.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, it's funny when you talk about the pate recipe, because as Nate and I went on, we actually were using that pate, because that pate, the thing about the Woodlands pate that was so cool was it was almost spreadable. It wasn't spreadable.
Yeah.
It was almost spreadable.
That was what we worked on for
so
long.
We dialed that amount of liver in just right.
But perfect. Later on, Nate and I were doing pate. We were grilling it a lot, grilling it or searing it.
Yeah.
So we changed the ratio. We backed off on the liver and pushed more shoulder in, because we wanted a firmer texture. So it's all about manipulating your variables. Like if you want your pate to be almost spreadable, up the liver, up the fat.
Yeah.
If you want your pate to not disintegrate into the grill and break your heart because you spent 100 hours on it, then up the protein, up the lean protein, back the liver off. It's all about manipulating variables. You're absolutely right.
And you mentioned like using like grams and ratios for bread baking. You're absolutely right. But think about pasta. Like there are different, I mean, Nate, it's all math and it's all ratios. Like there are certain types of pasta. If you're filling a pasta, drying a pasta, you're just like doing like fresh noodles or whatever. Like there are certain ratios. Holy shit. Can I say something? Can this be broadcasting to the public? weigh your eggs. Like, people make, like, oh, you just add, like, I need 2 egg yolks, 10 egg yolks, or whatever. Like, every egg yolk weighs a fraction.
No.
Well, especially the bigger a batch you're doing, the more you have to do that. If you're making something with 2 eggs, the chances of being a little bit off are not that big. If you're making something with 75 eggs, weigh those eggs.
Yeah.
Don't trust a recipe that says crack 100 eggs.
Do you remember the raviolis impersonating ducks, or how do we say it?
That was it. It was raviolis impersonating ducks.
Yeah. Those were so cool, man.
And the filling.
Those are fucking cool.
The filling was 50-50 shredded duck confit and Heston Blumenthal's chicken liver mousse.
That's another ratio. Oh my god! So like that. I'm sorry. I'm going off. So like Heston Blumenthal's liver parfait. You had mentioned it, and I think in one of the, or you had mentioned a liver pate in like one of the episodes, but like Heston Blumenthal's liver parfait is still like the best liver pate I've ever had.
Yep.
But I have to send you variables, different ratios. You should put them on the blog if you wanted to, but like,
yeah,
oyster parfait, mushroom parfait, like carrot parfait, like,
whoa,
oyster parfait, like, oh my god. And then like baste that it with
sounds
bacon.
Awesome,
dude. Baste it with a little bacon fat and a few splashes of like vinegar. Like, it's one of the greatest things ever. But it's like, it all, like, we took the ratio of Heston's liver parfait and used, like, and then like we tried it with raw oysters and then cooked oysters. We did it with like, and then we moved on to vegetables. We did like carrot and squash and mushroom and all those kind of things, and cooked mushroom.
So that, you took the formula of the Heston Blumenthal parfait and manipulated it by removing the central ingredient and replacing it with a bunch of crazy shit.
That's
what the last couple episodes were all about.
Yeah, I know. That's why it was so
absolutely variables and controlling them, and like, then once you have that ratio and you have that formula, you can, you know, you control the controllables, you vary what you want to vary. And, you know, even whether it's just, you know, like texture and temperature, varying that to keep the palate excited, or you want to vary all different kinds of ingredients. It's so cool, man.
And that's cooking.
God damn, I love you guys. Fucking guys. Yes. Yes. So like the liver part, like it was all about like the density of the final product. Like a liver when it's cooked is a certain density. An oyster when it's cooked is a certain density. A vegetable, et cetera, et cetera. And then adjusting, like, you know, moisture contents and that kind of thing. Oh my god, I just love you guys. I'm sorry, I could go off. I've had some whiskey.
We like love you so much.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have roundly failed to get at the topic at hand. So, in the interest of time, we're gonna go ahead and call this for the moment. But to be continued, because. We don't want the episode of the podcast to end up being an hour 50. So we've learned that like shorter episodes are better. People have a little easier time connecting with them. So
a lot more I want to say. Yes.
Yes. Yeah, oh my God. Tarver, I know. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and break. Speakeasy is going to play us out of here. We'd like to thank Tarver Super King King for appearing. Tarver, say something ridiculous.
Tampopo is a really fucking great. I can't think of it. What do you mean? You're putting me on the spot. I don't think
good enough. No, that's good enough.
Eat your papusa.
Eat your papusa. I am I'm the mouth of the South, Jesse Sutton, speaking for Nate Spinkake Whiting and Tarver Super King King. Thank you so much for joining us on part one of Hot Dogs and Caviar Cocktail Hour. However, part two, we're going to start cutting it again in like 1 minute. So just tune in next week. Same Hot Dogs and Caviar time, same Hot Dogs and Caviar channel. And by same time, I mean Tuesday, because sometimes it goes sometimes it goes up at 9 o'clock at night.
It'll be the same buzz next week.
My dad totally has a dealership. All right, so we're going to break. Thank you so much for joining us. Tune in next week for the continuation of this absolutely balls ridiculous conversation. This has been Hot Dogs and Caviar signing off.
Come on, little baby, my little darling, my little sister. some, or maybe just